Welcome aboard, you people. This is Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis. Off for another day of broadcast excellence.
Good to be back. And I know we have a ton to get to on the show today, but Blackhawks within one.
But as Powell in the Park, who's now Kevin in the Desert, same guy. And he's so
multiple hats.
Beside himself right now. I think we all are.
Yeah, it's Manny Machado news.
We're all not happy that Manny Machado has signed with a team I'd never heard of before, the San Diego Padres.
A team allegedly in Major League Baseball.
Right, I don't know who they are.
Why would he sign there? Why?
They gave him $300 million over 10 years.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
that'll do it. Yes. Yeah.
That's what it takes.
Yeah. But, I mean, so they were all, but weren't wasn't it 240 million over eight that the Sox were left at?
The White Sox offered him 8 years, $250 million, which is actually more money per year than what he could get with the Padres. They also had, this is all according to a Ken Rosenthal report, that there was incentives built in that could have essentially made the contract someday worth over $350 million. So, yeah. But apparently it was just the $300 million is what Machado had his eyes set on. Rick Hahn, the general manager for the Sox, says it didn't necessarily come down to just money, and maybe it didn't. I don't know. I don't know if the Sox offered him 10-year, $300 million and gave him the exact same offer as the Padres, if he still would have chose the Padres. So,
but we took like his entire family and put him on the team.
They're all there. They're ready for him. The locker was open next to his, brother-in-law?
As a diehard Sox fan noted on Twitter that now every time you see Yonder Alonso and John Jay, it's like seeing a sweater in the bottom of your closet that an ex-girlfriend left behind.
Oh, it's perfect. Perfect way of saying it. Oh, yeah. Ouch.
Yeah.
Yonder Alonso's his brother-in-law. He didn't want to talk to the media after all this. John Jay did talk, and, you know, what are the players going to say at this point? They're just kind of shrugging.
Well, they're trade. I mean, they're easy to move right now. Those guys you can now do away with.
Are they going to San Diego now, too?
I mean,
they did both formerly play for the Padres.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, do the Padres have anybody we really want? Because that's probably
they've got,
not.
They've got probably the top farm system in baseball right now, the Padres. So the Padres and White Sox are very much in a similar spot, where the Padres are kind of this up-and-coming team with a lot of young players, a lot of prospects people think are going to pan out, similar to the White Sox. And I think that's why those two, you know, it makes it painful, too, because it's not like, you know, in so many other situations in baseball over the past 10, 20, 30 years, it's the Yankees just outspending a team by $100 million. It's the Red Sox blowing a team out of free agency. This is the Padres you lost to, and it came down to two teams. So it stings a little bit, but, you know, justifying a $300 million contract is tough to do. Manny Machado's got a lot of work to make this deal worth, you know, to get a return on the investment, I guess, for the Padres.
All right. Well, I want everybody to go blank themselves. That's how I feel about this. I want Manny Machado and Scott Boras and the Padres and even the Tony Gwynn statue. I want it to all blank themselves. That's all I want.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about this. But now the issue appears to be dead now in terms of the Sox picking up a big player.
Is that true? Is Bryce Harper still not a possibility?
I wouldn't say it's 100% not a possibility. I mean, why not? If the Sox are willing to spend almost $300 million on Machado, why wouldn't they still go all in on Harper? All reports right now indicate it's basically the Phillies and Harper negotiating, and he's likely going to end up in Philly. But we'll see. But now, there are dozens of free agents out there still. There's some pitchers that the Sox could pursue, some more veteran guys as well. But
I saw that Jock Peterson is available.
Yeah, that's been a trade rumor. Jock Peterson's an outfielder for the Dodgers who,
he's a Cub killer, but other than that, he hasn't had a particularly great...
No, not really. He had a rookie year where he made the All-Star game, and the past few years has just kind of been so-so. I mean, you could get him probably for cheap and gives you another a young guy in the outfield, but I don't think that...
They don't really quite need that,
crazy.
Do they? I mean, they're a little stocked. I hate to say, who would ever say that about the White Sox? They're stocked, but I just did. But you need a superstar. You need somebody who's going to put keisters in the seat.
It's true.
Which is
that
nice.
Is true.
And draw attention and make them an overnight reality.
Yeah, I think you know, it's interesting you said that, because that was a question somebody asked Rick Renteria when he met with the media, was, okay, well, since you couldn't sign a superstar, now it's time to make your own superstars. And I guess that's one way of thinking of it. I mean, Eloy Jimenez is a guy that we think can be a superstar. You look at what the Cubs did. They had the Chris Bryants, the Javi Baez. They didn't go sign those guys. Those are guys that right. they, you know, those are homegrown type players. So that's what the White Sox are going to have to do. And
but they went and they signed ginormous pitchers, though.
They got John Lester. That was a turning point in the rebuild. No question about it. That put the league on notice. I think this sort of kind of puts the league on notice. And, whoa, White Sox almost landed Machado.
Stop trying to make yourself feel better.
Okay.
I'm
handling this just fine. I actually think that it's really hard to justify a $300 million contract.
All right. What happens? Is that a big pile of money that just sits there then? I mean, that's $300 million, right, that you didn't have to spend.
$250? $250? $240?
That's true.
Well, I mean, over a period of time.
A lot of White Sox fans are lashing out at social media. Rick Hahn this, Kenny Williams this, Jerry Reinsdorf this. Jerry Reinsdorf was just willing to dish out $250 million at minimum.
Right.
So
you can't fault him for that.
All you want. Yes, they didn't seal the deal, but come on. I mean, this is the reported deal was almost, it could have potentially been near $350 million. So what are you going to call it, White Sox cheap? Really? Jerry Reinsdorf said, sure, go spend $350 million. So, you know, you can be upset all you want at free agency. Maybe it wasn't just dollars. Maybe that Machado just wanted to go to the Padres. I don't know.
They said they felt they had the best offer on the table, and that really, as a package, it was even better than what the Padres were offering. So it's puzzling. And his whole family's here, right? His whole family is here.
Right.
Well, we got that going, too.
We got to get that plane ticket for his mom.
I thought his mom was in charge of concessions. Isn't that what we heard most recently? We had everybody here.
Yeah.
The empty locker was all ready.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I wonder who's going to fill that locker, bro.
Well, I hope it's somebody big.
Well, maybe Bryce Harper. Maybe. I mean, the way that the Padres swept in the last week and did it, if, you know, I mean, I'm sure that Rick Hahn's on the phone right now. Look at me. I'm beside myself.
Now you're trying to make yourself feel better.
I am.
We all are. You just kind of hope that this was in the works. And it was. It just came close. And that, I think that hurts more.
I mean, it's just a bad day for bad couple days for baseball in Chicago. Because, you have on the north side, you had Tom Ricketts yesterday apologizing for everything except for the Lindbergh baby kidnapping.
And another thing we need to apologize
for. Exactly. And Pearl Harbor. We had nothing to do with Pearl Harbor, okay?
Yeah, really.
And outfield prospect for the White Sox, Luis Bossabe, broke his hand. He's out for 3 months. So just a little cherry on top today.
Wait, who is it?
Luis Bossabe. You weren't going to see him this year, but he's one of their top outfielding prospects. Broke his hand in batting practice yesterday.
So we got that going for us.
A lot of great news out of the Cubs and Sox camp the past 2 days. This has been like every time I come out of the report.
I like it. Kevin, I'm fine, okay? I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm handling this just fine.
Every time
he started
text
talking
producer
to you.
Jeff, he's like, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, well, there's the apology tour, and oh, by the way, Sox miss Machado. So we can talk about that in our baseball reports today.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, because CLTV wants to know the answer to that question, and I understand. Yes. I understand why. All right.
Southsiders hit twice because the Obama Presidential Library, the lawsuit against it, can proceed, said the judge. So.
Oh, because that's a good idea. Because there shouldn't be an Obama library in Chicago. Where are they going to put it? Oh, I know. I know, Donald Trump. They should put it in Kenya. I know.
Oh, gee. Oh, geez.
Nairobi, right? Is that it?
They want Jackson Park, but the Friends of the Park don't want Jackson Park.
Why? Right. What's wrong with those people?
They don't want it.
All right. Can you...
Yeah, sorry.
Bah!
That's tough to absorb.
Ah! Coming up, we're going to talk to Ben Bradley from WGN-TV News. But first, let's check in. And here's Ryan Burrow. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
We're going to take another look at Jussie Smollett and kind of reset things where they're at right now in this investigation.
Get Real in the Morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV Morning News team all weekdays, 4 a.m. to 10 a.m. on WGN.
Not a happy camper.
No, I know. There's
not a happy camper, Ben Bradley.
We got grand juries. We got judges ruling. We got, I mean, what, this city is popping today.
It totally is.
I mean, there's so many alleged grand juries going on in 26 in California right now. Our photographers don't know which grand jury goes for which case and who's there for what.
Right.
And what it's
and who's
confusing.
Asking.
All right, so we got an R. Kelly grand jury, we're assuming, right?
Well, if you believe Michael Avenatti, yeah.
Okay. I always do.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Avenatti seems like the most credible person in this entire universe. but, yeah, he claims that there's a grand jury. He's handed over a tape. There's a grand jury here.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. You've got the... Is there a grand jury on Jussie Smollett?
If you believe TMZ... I never thought I would utter when I graduated from the University of Missouri School of Journalism, but yeah.
Our sources at TMZ tell us. Yeah, it does feel weird to say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Try to say that on TV with a straight face.
Do we? What else do we think?
Then you got the judge making the ruling on the Obama Center today, saying that this lawsuit can go forward, which could potentially delay, if not... seriously hurt the efforts to build the Obama Presidential Center in Jackson Park. And
now,
I just checked because, boy, doesn't this sound familiar? Not passing judgment, but you remember a little thing called the George Lucas Museum?
I do.
That was derailed
vividly
with a similar lawsuit?
Mm-hmm.
I just checked. They've not only broken ground, but the building is rising for the George Lucas Museum in Los Angeles
Los Angeles.
It's just proof. And look, as New York just figured out with the Amazon headquarters, it's just proof that not everything is given or a sure thing.
But as a longtime Chicago alderman once told me, not even fishing is on the square. And you wonder who benefits from this getting scuttled. And I'm trying to figure that out, because the one thing in this town that I know for absolute certain, the one thing I know for sure, is that almost no transaction goes one way or the other, goes north or goes south, without some powerful interest
having their foot on
being
the pedal
benefited.
It's
right.
A great observation. I mean, and on its face, this is about the location of it, that it's on public land in the National Register of Historic Places. Jackson Park is on that, and they feel they have a foothold in order
to the city
decide.
The issue is very similar to what we saw with the George Lucas Museum. The whole issue is, can the city essentially give away public land to a private entity? Now, they can do their legal song and dance about, well, no, we're not actually giving it away, we're leasing it for a dollar, and after the 399th year, we get it back, but they're building this big building on it. But, you know, that's the legal standing that was used to challenge the George Lucas Museum. It's the legal standing that's being used now to challenge the Obama Presidential Center. You know, yes, I get the argument about open land in Jackson Park. I get the argument about concerns about pricing people out of their homes in that area.
I don't think that's going to happen because there's a museum down there. There's already a pretty sizable museum down there.
Yeah, and I would say every day we do stories with community groups saying, please, please invest in the South Side, invest in the West Side.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Hear it all the time.
And now there's a huge challenge to the biggest investment the South Side will have ever seen.
You're right, something that would draw international tourists to that area.
Mm-hmm. So the judge today certainly didn't kill the Obama Presidential Center, but what he said is the lawsuit can move forward. But he was very specific to say, I'm not passing judgment on the merits of the suit, just saying there's enough here that we should continue to hear evidence.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Is Jackson Park named after Andrew Jackson? I'm assuming it is.
I'm assuming so.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I see where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are the Friends of the Park worried that Jackson Park, which, and again, its design was all part of the Burnham plan that brought the 1893 Columbian Exposition to Hyde Park and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's little roadways in there that are circular, and it is an interesting drive. Well, you can get lost very, very quickly in there because somehow you turn around in a circle and you don't know why as you're trying to get to the Skyway if the Ryan is all backed up, right? I mean, that's how I know what
goes
on there. right? So as you're driving through there, and you might get a little confused, and at night if you drive through, there's always police lights on, you know, in there as they're patrolling the park, right? That's part of what they do. I don't think that, and it's beautiful. Jackson Park is a beautiful piece of land.
It is.
But it is not really heavily trafficked. Right? It's
poor utilized, right?
Yeah.
In any way.
Well, in the summer, it's very busy. I mean, look, we went through the same argument with the Chicago Olympic bid in Washington Park. And there was, even though it was, as Mike North famously called it, an inflatable stadium that would be gone before too long. Pat Ryan, the CEO of the bid, really loved that comment, by the way.
It was a very cool idea they had there.
Yeah.
It was.
They were going to put the high school football championship in there and everything. Hey, listen, we got to run. I can't. I'm beyond myself right now. I'm too upset about all of this.
Are you going to make it to 6 o'clock?
I don't think so. I don't think so, honestly, Ben Bradley. Anna,
give him his shot.
I will.
See you.
You're not
the
helping,
four,
though.
The five,
this is what
the
happens
six,
when you spend too much time with Rich Roper.
The 9 and the 10. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben. Goodbye, Ben. You didn't need to say goodbye. Ryan Perreault will check in with the news. In for Kim Gordon. Coming your way in 2 minutes. Concho with Anna DeBlantis.
Yes.
A.B. Stoddard joins us. You know her, you love her. You see her on all the panels. She is the Switzerland of political pundits.
She is.
Because you can hear her or see her on whether it's Fox News Channel or CNN.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the MSNBC, I don't watch it that much, so I don't really know for sure. But then the Sunday morning panels and things
right.
like that.
She's one
everywhere.
Of the few to be everywhere.
Yeah, Very few. I envision myself very much in the same vein, although no one ever invites me on those panels anymore. All right, now, let me ask you this question, because we got a couple things that are developing right now before we get into, because you've written something that I'm finally going to disagree with you. For the first time in the years that you have been on this program, AB, I'm going to disagree with you about something. But before we get to that, I want to ask you about this New York Times story that is developing that that Donald Trump at some point asked the human refrigerator, his attorney general, temporary attorney general there that they had, that to somehow get the Southern District of New York attorney, the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, to unrecuse himself from the Michael Cohen case. And it seems like that is a pretty big deal now on news that Michael Cohen is going to be testifying to three committees next week in Washington, D.C., and there may be a movement of his, he may be cooperating, trying to get a better deal.
It's really stunning. I think it's stunning how well the New York Times has reported on this administration. Certainly, they're terrific journalists, and they're good at running down sources. But I think there are a lot of sources in this unprecedented presidency who want to talk to the New York Times, because the situation is so surreal and so extra normal, and in some places, unethical and potentially illegal. So the story today is incredible because it kind of weaves together a long, large picture of Trump, trying to block this investigation from day one. What he does on Twitter to spin the PR of it, that there's a deep state out to get him. But it has new findings in it, new revelations, like the one you just mentioned, that are really a big deal. And so what I find so astounding about the fact that now, from the very anecdote you just described, him asking Matt Whitaker as acting AG to ask a guy at the Southern District of New York to unrecuse himself, it probably means that not only is Mueller looking at obstruction of justice, but the SDNY is as well. So separate investigations, looking at the fact that the president might have had willful intent to impede the investigations into him, his family, his business dealings, whatever. But that what's so amazing to me about the anecdote about Whitaker, the human refrigerator, is that this is so late in the game. I mean, the thing is, like an old dog, Trump can't be taught new tricks. And so well into the presidency, which he has told us he's learned from, and he's learned, you know, how to better wheel and deal after people like Paul Ryan suckered him and schnookered him all this time, he still believes that the Justice Department is at his disposal to be his personal, like, attack dog team, you know. So he's still all the way into 2018, into the late stage, you know, Whitaker stage, Justice Department undermining activity of his. Yeah. He was so bold as to ask about unrecusal, a question we'd expect if we looked back at this frightening timeline, you know, of like March of 2017. So he continues to do the same thing, no matter how many people with many, many law degrees from many white collar firms tell him that this is the obstruction of justice.
All right. I think much is going to come from this. The Andrew McCabe, even today, every day he gets on TV and he says something else that sort of unfurls here. I know he's got a book that he's written. I know he's a known liar, but he was the, but what he's, the story he is telling now, what he was lying about was whether or not he was the leaker. Most people lie about whether or not they're the leaker. That I kind of get. The question was,
I agree with you.
What he was leaking was you know, designed to, you know, try to move the investigation in a way to let the public know. It's important, you know, sometimes, you know, the leak, you know, for us on this side, you know, the leak is an important thing because that lets us know what's actually going on, and it helps move the story and brings to the public, hey, wait a second, let's look out for this. And he was very concerned, as was the Justice Department, that they had a rogue president who might have been actually compromised. Let's put it that way. That's the kindest way of putting it. The most generous way of putting it. Compromised by the Russians in some way, shape, or form. And they went to, and he says today, he said he went to the Gang of Eight, which is the people in the Senate and in the House, including Devin Nunes, who, you know, ended up carrying the water for the Trump administration in the House Intel Committee when the Republicans ran it, that they had launched this investigation. They knew it. And no one from those senators and congressmen back in 2017 tried to stop them from doing it or raised an objection to it, except that, and I think this will be very interesting to learn, except that Devin Nunes ran over to the White House, as we will all famously recall, right in the middle of the night, to go look at some documents. And the question is, was that the beginning of the conversation with the president about what McCabe had just done?
I think that all of the things that all the caveats that you started with on McCabe's credibility, you know, have to be presented. You also are right that he, you know, people do, if you're caught lying about leaking, it's differently. It's different than like making up stories about how there's a border wall somewhere that we don't know about. So fabulism, right, is different from some certain untruths that got him fired from the FBI. But if just a small part of what he's been saying in the last few days is true, I think it's frightening. I mean, the idea that this Gang of Eight now, which includes, you know, four Republicans, will have to answer for the fact that they did not refute, did not, you know, block anything, take issue with anything they were talking about when briefed. That's pretty explosive. And the anecdote about how President Trump is, you know, presented with intelligence from his own intelligence agencies, you know, the crown jewel of intelligence on the planet, and people who are risking their lives to get it for him. He says, no, I believe Putin. I mean, if just those two things alone are true, I can't believe that people, you know, their hair isn't falling out around town. I don't care what party you're in. So,
Well, I can hear him saying that, though.
Incredibly just, damning.
I can hear him saying that just to try to push back. I think when people tell him anything, he's a contrarian. He goes, that's not true. It's this way. But to use Putin as an example, it's just in front of your intelligence people. It's the dumbest thing ever.
Unbelievable.
Couldn't be dumber.
Let me ask you about Bernie Sanders, AB, because first of all, he just hired the first ever Muslim American campaign manager, just cross. But as soon as he kind of put his foot in the ring officially, you saw the analysts say, hey, his time has passed. This, you know, hang it up, Bernie. But you saw the donations flow in immediately for him. Seems to still have a lot of enthusiasm behind him.
Oh, my God.
Right.
I know, you don't like him.
Look, we never know what's going to take off in this crazy world we're in. And I cannot crawl into the mind of a Democratic primary voter I do think that his time has come and gone. I see why he gets in. He thinks the party's gone further left, embracing socialism. Now is his time. I think because the socialist voters have other options, they're not going to be interested in him anymore. Does he raise a lot of dollars the first day? Yeah, sort of like the Paul family, right? They have an incredible following. They broke all the straw votes whenever they ran for president because they were really good organizers. They had money pouring in around the clock because they had, you know, a really enthusiastic libertarian following. I don't know that this definitely means he's going to eclipse, you know, the others in the race. I think eventually, and what's so interesting is that he didn't really have to kind of, he lost so badly to black voters with Hillary, and he's going to try to play like a new identity politics now because he's, you know, on stage with all these women and Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, who are both African American, and there's going to be a real challenge to his ability to break through, you know, across the coalition. And I just think that he's yesterday's news, so I think yeah. Elizabeth Warren is too. I'm happy to be proven wrong.
And the president likes Bernie Sanders. The president today said he thinks that Bernie Sanders was treated very unfairly by the Clintons and that it was terrible what happened to him. So he would like to
He would love to
see Bernie Sanders against him. But I guess this is the point. This is where I'm going to disagree with you. You are making the argument, if I am not mistaken, and I'm just paraphrasing here wildly, but that the socialist Democrats, you know, your AOCs and Bernies and all the rest of them are actually good for the Democratic Party, because then the centrists, the moderates, the Klobuchars and the, you know, Bidens, if he decides to run, will be able to point to them and go, hey, I'm not like them. And so it'll be a counterpoint. The president will be shooting at the wrong target here. Is that basically what your theory is?
Yeah, my point is the gift of them, right, is that it's so bad. It's so anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, anti-billionaire, anti-prosecutor, Green New Deal, you know, off to an embarrassing start. All these stumbles and bumbles provide the people who might get into the race, and I'm not sure that they will. I mean, we're not positive by it. We really think Biden's getting in. We really think we might see some other moderates like Hickenlooper or another governor like Steve Bullock, Mike Bloomberg, people to get into joining me, Klobuchar. But I think that it is a good alarm bell, because look at the way the Republicans have jumped on this. This is not the mainstream of this country. It's just not. And you can get into a nuanced debate about how, if you criticize the policies of right-wing leaders like Bibi Netanyahu, who've embraced Trump, you know, you can pick on Israel with regards to the West Bank and all this stuff. Trump doesn't do nuance. Next year, he's going to beat up on the other side with bumper stickers, and it's going to be socialism, and it's going to be anti-Israel and infanticide. And I think that the gift that this sort of new explosion has produced with these freshmen who are really feisty and really Trumpian, who want to just be out there on social media, be really defiant, pick fights, you know, the facts don't really always matter. I think that it provides an opportunity for the party to see early how much this scares independent voters and will turn off a lot of never Trump Republicans who they want to win over next year.
I think they are. So this is where I disagree with you. I think they are so afraid. The Democratic leadership is so afraid of this group, the way the Republicans are afraid of Trump, right? And they're quiet about him and they let him get away with all this crap. I think the Democrats are going to do the Democratic leadership and the DNC, Tom Perez and all the rest are going to sit there and let the crazy, as you pointed out, anti-Semitic, and otherwise anti-business, anti-everything, almost the almost Antifa with a nice, you know, that actually has a congressional button on them. Mm-hmm. Those people,
exactly.
I think, are going. The Democrats are going to be so afraid of them, they're going to let them run loose. And I want to tell you something. This is not an accident. This is Putin 2.0. What you're watching.
Totally.
Here. This is exactly what they are doing now, what is happening in the Kremlin and what is happening in St. Petersburg at the Internet Research Agency is the exact same thing. They've already built Trump. They built that organization. They built that kind of, you know,
I agree with you.
On the right, and now on the left, they want to build this up to further divide us, because that's what's in it. And you're seeing it, and how do I know this is because they're doing it in Britain. Britain is going through this now as they're trying to refigure out the Brexit thing. They have the exact same ultra-liberal problem in Britain where you've got anti-Semitic, anti-Israel in a sense, not like you're talking about where we can all disagree about you know, walled cities and all the rest of that stuff in Israel, or the two-state solution, but actually going after them for using all the same hateful tropes that have been built into for thousands of years about Jews around the world, as they have escaped places that were trying to kill them. This is where we sit. This is where we sit again, and it is Putin. And we have gotten I would love to see the intelligence services of this country come out and publicly start to talk about it, but they can't because they will be stopped by the White House, who doesn't want to acknowledge that Putin really did what he did.
I agree, and I really do, because the end game is division and sort of the destruction of both parties, so that everyone in the country is politically homeless increasingly, and that the leaders are extreme, and they get into power and they fail, and then they're overtaken by the other side, which then fails, and we're convulsed by these power shifts. I just want to say one thing quickly, because I really hammered on Nancy Pelosi. I believed, with more than 30 people on the record against her, she could not be reelected speaker. She is not going to put Medicare for All on the front burner. She's looking at stabilization of the Affordable Care Act. She understands how dangerous this anti-Semitic stuff is. She forced an apology from Ilhan Omar immediately. I think she did the right thing. She's very cognizant of the fact that this is a boomerang of extremism. And my column was meant to sort of, you know, to speak about the campaign trail and the primary contestants and see if they can figure this out quickly. Otherwise, like I said, they won't win the middle and they'll reelect Trump. Yeah. But I think watch congressional leadership's reaction to these people. They don't want to, like, you know, really chase them in public, but they know how dangerous this is.
AB, thank you very much. Great conversation. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
We're still friends. I disagree, but we're still friends. But I don't really disagree. We don't disagree that much. Let's face it. We're basically on the same thing. And we all agree that Matthew Whitaker is a refrigerator with a head. All right. Let us now check in. Here's Ryan Burrow. What's coming up at the top?
A lawsuit filed against the Obama Presidential Center can move forward.
Coming up, Stories That Matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN. Con Show with Anna DeVlantis. Tom Skilling joins us, being brought to us by Permaseal Basement Systems.
Hey, Tom.
Hello, Ro. Hello, Anna. Welcome back.
Thank you. I've got some news for Ro that I think will make him feel a little bit better.
Oh,
get over his Manny Machado malaise. It's exactly 1 month from today. Chicago will have its first 7 p.m. sunset of the year.
Say that again. It's what?
First 7 p.m. sun. 1 month from today.
That's not good.
Exactly. And we're wait, there's more.
What?
We're currently gaining about 2 minutes and 45 seconds of daylight every single day.
Wow.
I'm
really impressed. You've done your homework on
the National Weather Service actually put that out, so I just sort of was letting him know that seemed like a good source, and that might brighten Rose's day by bringing more sunshine to his day.
Well, here's another one. A year ago it hit 60 on this date, and there were to be two more 60s after that, which shows what is possible at this time of the year. I don't see a 60 anytime.
Call me when it's 60. What are you doing?
I don't think he's going to be calling you anytime soon.
Pointing out that we're in a different, milieu.
Mm-hmm.
Milieu.
Nice.
Right.
Nice.
Right. That's a great word.
Does that apply?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think it does.
Yeah.
A person's social environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Milieu.
It's,
okay.
Days are getting longer. I'll tell you another thing, too. This is another one of those days when you walk outside, you really feel the difference. The winds are calm. The February sun is getting through
true.
The clouds. It feels pretty nice.
It makes your car warm.
Yeah.
That's what it does. It makes your car warm without necessarily turning the heater on.
That's a good point.
But then you get outside and you're like, what the?
Still feels sort of cold.
The problem is when you begin precipitating into this air mass, which you can do, will do late tonight and tomorrow, you can get a regular smorgasbord of stuff to fall on you, and we're going to do that. It'll start to snow, probably mix up mid-morning tomorrow, and could get 1 to 3 inches before the mix-up, the mix precip comes in. But it'll become more occasional in the afternoon than snow shower tomorrow night. But still, you know, we're rounding important bends here.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Did I hear you correctly that we have atmospheric cocktails heading our way?
We do.
See, Ro, they got that, too. That's a good thing.
Why are you trying to make me feel better?
It's
not working.
Day.
Whatever
it's
you're doing,
hour.
I got the friends of
atmospheric cocktails doesn't cheer you up.
I was going to say, even the word cocktail, we thought would warm you up.
It didn't work.
Even though it doesn't have anything to do with an adult beverage.
Put that on the Colonel.
I became a grand, what am I? I'm a grand owner.
Well, you have a grand puppy now.
I have a grand puppy now.
Oh.
I just got a grand puppy.
Really?
Congratulations. That's huge.
I just got the, and that's the nicest thing that's happened to me today.
So in other words, you have a dog that gave birth to puppies and the puppies
my daughter and son-in-law got a puppy.
Oh, I see.
So I now have we're about to live very close to each other, so I have a feeling that that I'm going to be spending a lot of time with that puppy.
That's how it goes.
Especially when the puppy is
not ready to do everything on its own yet.
Yeah, when it's still not sure where it's going to go to the bathroom, I think it's going to be mine.
What you call a granddogger.
I'm a granddog. Yeah, it's my granddogger. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A designated dog walker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Dad, can you walk the dog?
Oh, totally.
A hallowed position in our world.
It is.
Today, you know?
I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Just don't let them mess up the deck. We have some, spring's just around the corner.
Right.
We got some parties. Yeah. We got a plan. Just
look, Fido. Yeah. You do your business, but don't you mess
over
with
here
my deck.
In this
yeah,
spot.
That's right.
Get the training down.
Yeah.
They learn. They learn. You can train them, Ro.
I know.
You're a very patient individual, I'm sure.
Look at me. Look at me.
I don't know. Puppies can change you.
Oh my God.
Maybe this is the moment in time.
I had a moment with a puppy once that was just, I forever am mad at myself about because I was just so ready to hand the puppy back and ended up being the best dog ever. Sometimes the hardest puppies are the best dogs.
Yeah.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Well, you learn something about yourself.
Yeah.
Your patience level.
They are
level,
adorable. There are no two ways about it. You know what? I was on vacation one time. We, for some crazy reason, went into an ASPCA and all these beautiful little animals there. Just, you could take any one of them or all of them home if there was a physical way to do it. I had to leave. I got sad to think that I couldn't take them all home with me.
Yeah, I know.
It is a sad
it's tough. They're tough to go to, those places. Unless you know for sure you're taking one with you.
Yeah.
It's not the zoo. It's not the, oh, look, let's take a look and enjoy it.
It's true.
If you go, you got to take one with you.
And you know what else, Ru? It's amazing. The staffs of like Anti Cruelty or Paws or outfits like this.
And, I know.
They really are a special breed because it must break their hearts to see these little dogs and cats sit there unadopted for periods of time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And the hard to adopt ones that you're just trying to find an owner, that really makes sense for their life. And oh gosh, breaks your heart.
It does. It does.
Save a life.
But it's funny, have you ever driven around town and you see everybody walking their dogs? They come in and they come in all sizes, all shapes, all colors. And yet you see them walking along and just very happy at their situation in life.
And they start to look like their owner. This is what happens. Any of your dogs look like you, Tom?
I hope not.
No, I mean, they just sort of resemble you. You got the stocky guy with the stocky dog. You got the petite woman with the petite dog. You see this a lot.
No, they're much better looking than I am, I think.
Oh, what the hell is that all about? So my new English bulldog granddogger is I think I already start to look like I just seen him for the first time now on Skype and I've decided that I look just like him.
Yeah, see?
And FaceTime.
So if this is working the wrong way.
Yeah, it's kind of working the wrong way. I'm like, oh, he looks just like
me. He's supposed to emulate you, not the other way around.
He kind of has a grumpy look on his face.
He does.
A little bit.
The library's not going to open. He's got that look.
That look when you get a news alert on your phone. Like, what? What is this? What's happening?
Yeah.
But that's an exciting time, Ro. It's going to be great.
It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be good for everybody.
And I need, I need this weather to break here, Tom. That's what I need.
I know. I think we all do. We've got, we talked yesterday. I mean, real cabin fever was those barbaric things we went through in the 70s, and we've had a couple of years since then.
But don't we have more cabin feverishness coming, like, in the next couple of days?
Yeah, it's not going to warm up right away. But you know what? The temperatures over the next week don't look bad. I mean, we're talking 41 Saturday, 39 Sunday, 34 Monday,
rainy,
40
though, right?
Tuesday. Yeah, the next system will be a rain system Saturday.
We have a system tomorrow, though, before we get to that.
Yeah, we've got snow tonight. Starts midnight to 2 a.m., runs pretty steadily into the first hours of the morning rush from all indications. Then it begins to mix up, and that'll happen first down in the southern suburbs. And then, you know, the rest of the day it starts becoming more occasional, and it's kind of a mix. Then we go into the backwash snow showers tomorrow night. They ought to be over by Thursday morning. So we got a couple of days where there'll be nice sun. And, you know, we're talking 39 on Friday. That's pretty close to seasonal levels for this time of the year. And then it goes up to 41 Saturday. Wind will come off the water during the day, but as the storm tracks right over us Saturday night, Sunday, we'll pop into that little warm sector, and then the cold air comes in again. Sunday could go over to snow showers.
You know how...
Another system that could snow on us that Tuesday. And there's some pretty cold air coming in later next week. Temperatures will go, you know, anywhere from 9 to 17 degrees below normal. That'd be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So essentially the final days of February, the first days of March. But, you know, I was looking toward mid-month. You were mentioning that you watched Seven on the weekend, and they were talking about something mid-month. I'm not quite sure what they were talking about.
Well, they're not sure either. They don't really know.
No, but you know what? It does look like we'll get out of the heart of this cold toward mid-month, so I presume that's what they were talking about. But it's not a heat wave, but it does look better.
Well, out of the cold would be something. I mean, You know how sometimes you forget what you dated? Like, you miss a day, especially on a week like this, where you had a lot of people yesterday off.
Right.
So you're always off by a day. I am off by a week right
really?
Now.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of the weather?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I can't decide. I keep thinking that this is the last week of February, and then we start March next week, which, like, on Monday. But we don't. We're off. I'm off almost a full week.
Yeah, you are.
And I think it's because of the Oscars. I don't know. I'm just confused.
You know, Ro, I'm going to have to loan my doctor to you. That's a lot.
Please, he's going to have to get in line. I have an entire staff out there with lab coats on when I walk out of here.
I know.
It's like they're.
You too, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got like clipboards and lab coats. And,
I know.
Yeah.
Jeez,
it's bad.
Jeez.
They're all like, do you want to see him first? Or should you see him first?
Yeah, representative of Big Pharma along with them. You know, it's just...
Exactly. Would you like to... We're going to be testing you on this.
Which of these would work?
Yeah, right.
Well, another guy's got a wooden spoon in his hand. That's a guy. It's weird.
I know.
It's
the electroshock guy that worries you.
Yeah,
the most.
I know. I don't like that one as much.
If you're like me, you know.
Something I definitely don't like,
No.
Okay,
I'll be
better now.
Right.
Better.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That hurts just hearing that.
All right, I feel better.
And those tongue depressors they put in, you know, like in the Beautiful Mind movie. You know, You know, I had an uncle who went through that years and years ago. And it's a terrible thing to, you know, reach that point. I wonder what the rationale behind how that's supposed to work is. I wonder if it does. I don't know. I guess it does because they continue to do it.
It's supposed to redirect the electrical impulses over the top of your brain that go between the hemispheres. That was the whole idea of that.
I see.
Yeah. It didn't necessarily always do the trick. Sometimes it just shut down the frontal lobe and you were like, okay, that's fine. Whatever happened to Grandma? She doesn't talk very much anymore.
Great.
Yeah.
Banging my head against the wall kind of rearranges the
rocks. You got that going? All right, that's good.
That's helpful sometimes. You're right.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know,
kind of the same principle, just it doesn't involve electricity, you know?
All right, so the snow tomorrow, we got, it's overnight, and the morning rush will be devastated or just affected?
No, I for one thing, the temperatures at which this thing's going to occur, the major thoroughfares will respond well to chemicals and all, and there will be some wind with this. That'll let up during the day as the center of that disturbance comes over us. Then as it goes by, the strong winds on the backside lock in tomorrow night again. But, I think this is a situation our snow removal folks will be able to get under control. Yeah. Having said that, be careful on the side streets and all, on the sidewalks and untreated surfaces.
I always am. I'm always very careful on the side streets.
Me too. I used to wonder as a kid, how is it that people fall? And I don't wonder that anymore.
No, that's true. You get to a certain age, you're like, okay.
Yeah. You realize that...
I don't even move. I just put my feet down. And I just sort of lean forward, and I just move my way down.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, we got to run. Tom, thank you very much.
See you guys.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Take care. You bet.
All right, let's talk to Ryan Burrow. He's got the WGN update at the bottom of the hour. What's going on?
The reward is being upped 2.5 years after a 15-year-old was found burned to death in the Austin neighborhood.
All right, I'm beside myself, and I do not understand.
Mm-hmm.
So many things today.
Over Adam Levine's halftime show?
No.
And the tattoos and the shirtless
I'm beyond
thing?
That.
Shirtlessness?
Weeks ago.
Okay.
Weeks
you got ago. Over that.
I'm going to be upset about something at the Oscars on Sunday, I'm sure. But before we even get to that,
okay.
One of the things that got me totally nuts today is the judge's decision. I'm sure there's good legal foundation for it, but whatever the point is, that there is even a fight over the Obama library and center, whatever we're going to call it, education center.
Presidential center.
Right. On the south side in Jackson Park. I don't get this. I don't understand why we threw George Lucas out of town. They've started broken ground. They're already building the Lucas Center in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what? Don't get all Brooklyn and start blowing things out that we could actually use for development. People have been complaining for the better part of the last 100 years that there's not enough development in the south side of Chicago, certainly for the last 50 years,
you
without
certainly hear
question,
that.
Mm-hmm. Right? There's not enough development on the south side and on the west side, and here's an opportunity for development and a completely appropriate opportunity for development that celebrates an important moment in Chicago and American history. And somehow there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like the idea of this and they want to get in the way of the wheel of progress, and that guy's name is Justin Kaufman, because I know that he's always mad about these
it's
things.
It's his fault.
Yeah, but... before we argue with him, I wanted to talk to Lisa Bertinoli, who is with, she's the nonprofits and philanthropy reporter over at Crane Chicago Business, our reporting partner. And mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain this to me in a way that will make me less agitated, Lisa, but I doubt it.
Oh, okay. All right. This is a lot to explain. So basically, I am confident in saying that nobody is against the Obama Presidential Center per se. What protects our parks is against, and that's the nonprofit that sued to prevent construction of the center, is its location in Jackson Park, which is on the National Register of Historic Places. It's 20 acres of parkland that protects our parks, feels the city and the park district did not have the right to hand over to a private foundation. The other thing at play is that when the Obamas announced that the Obama Presidential Library was coming to Chicago, it was a presidential library. And a presidential library is a thing. They're run and maintained by the National Archives. They have federal employees. They have federal oversight. The former president and the first lady decided that they wanted to have more control over the center, and they didn't want it to be run by the National Archives. So that's why it's called the Obama Presidential Center, not the Obama Presidential Library. So the folks who are two University of Chicago-trained lawyers behind Protect Our Parks said, well, it was a bait and switch. That you sold us on a presidential library, now it's a private presidential center. So that's why we object to it being built on 20 acres of public parkland.
But it's being privately funded, right, through donations to the center itself.
Correct.
Right. And it's the plans for it are sizable, right? I mean, it's not a small building.
It's 235 feet. It's a big building.
So it's be like a 24-story building, which, you know, it adds to the skyline as you head south through the city. If you, mm-hmm. You see all of a sudden on the lakefront, you see things cropping up right as soon as you get into the city. I think that, and it's right on the lake. It's a very, very cool footprint. I don't understand why they, is there any explanation as to why the Obamas chose to go down the presidential center route as opposed to the library route?
Because I think they wanted more control over over how they are presented. If it were run by the National Archives, it would be federal employees, it would be this, that, and the other thing. They wouldn't have as much control. But when the president has been here talking about his plans for the center, they want it to be a museum, they want it to be a gathering place for people all over the world to come and discuss new ideas and help save the world. They wanted more control over it.
That's why at the Nixon Library, they have a Watergate section.
See, it's actually an accurate representation of history, right? Yeah. You got to include that part.
Yeah, that's,
but I guess it feels like when we saw this, this is kind of round two of what we saw with the George Lucas Star Wars Museum. And in that case, and tell me how this is different, when the Friends of the Park, different from this group, as you point out, decided to raise that challenge and was given legal justification to move forward, George Lucas just said, I'm going to take my museum elsewhere, and he's slated to open that in a couple of years in Los Angeles. Now, here, this would significantly delay the construction. Isn't that what would happen?
Okay, that's very interesting. You should bring up the Lucas Museum. My understanding, and this is a very, very broad top line summary, is this: Friends of the Park, the land ordinance that forever free and open, that business, it's for land east of the drive that was once covered by Lake Michigan. The Lucas Museum was meant to be on a parcel of land that was east of the drive. The Jackson Park site is west of the drive, and I'm pretty sure that's why Friends of the Park doesn't sue left and right. They're very, very careful about what suits they file and when and where. So that's why I think that's why I think Protect the Park stepped in, because Friends of the Park declined to, literally make a federal case out of it in this issue. But, Ro, you had mentioned that the center was being funded by private donations. The city will be on the hook for probably $200 million because all the roads surrounding the proposed site need to be reconfigured. Cornell Drive has to be closed, well, Hayes Drive, Stony Island, and the city has agreed to pay for that. There's another big thing that nobody knows is that the water table is really high underneath the proposed site, and nobody knows, when they start digging, if they hit water, who's going to pay for the reinforcement? If there's any soil remediation that needs to be done, who's going to pay for that? All those are up in the air, and that's taxpayer money that'll pay for that, not private foundations.
Theoretically, the idea of these kinds of developments, though, is that they pay themselves back, right? They pay back in tax revenues throughout the throughout their existence, right? I mean, that was certainly the idea in the Lucas thing. And again, these are University of Chicago lawyers, so they may have a little bit better training and footing on this than did the Friends of the Park in terms of the Lucas thing. The Lucas thing still will stick in my craw for the rest of my existence. I just want to tell you that, Lisa, because the fact of the matter is that that's a parking lot!
Right. Well, some people, it is a parking lot. You're exactly correct.
Yeah, and it was, and you know what? It was a real strange combination of strange bedfellows when you had the do-gooders who were like, "I'm sorry, we just can't build here on the lakefront. That's not Burnham's plan." And then Bears fans who are tailgaters who regularly use that lot, south lot.
Wait
who
a
were
minute!
Like, hey, hold on a second. I've been my family. My grandfather was tailgating there. What are you doing?
Not that parking lot.
Right. So it was like, it's just the craziest thing ever. This is a crazy city. But Jackson Park, I mean, in terms of development and doing stuff to create, energy south of the Museum of Science and Industry, that's an important thing. Because, you're right on the door of South Shore there. South Shore needs economic development or redevelopment. And, Hyde Park's doing pretty great. You got to keep moving south if we're going to develop. You got to move west. You got to move south. There are developments in Englewood that are doing, I think, you know, that are moving in a way that are going to be good for that part of the city. Is there a possibility, Lisa, before we let you go, is there a possibility that the Obamas will say, boogie out of there and go to one of the other sites that was under contention, including at the University of Illinois Chicago or
Hawaii? That's another one.
Well, Hawaii was. I don't think they're going to go to Hawaii, but you never know. Would really be something if they decided to, you know, ditch Chicago completely. But because she's from here, I doubt they'll do that.
No, I don't think they would ditch Chicago completely. I really don't think they would. They have ties to Chicago. They love the city. You know, their whole. If you hear them talk, they met here, they married here, they've started to raise their kids here.
Yeah, we saw the movie.
But I do think that if this battle continues to wage, they might look at other sites. I mean, you've ever taken the Green Line or any of the, if you've ridden around the South Side, there's plenty of wide open spaces of land that could use some development.
Sure.
And maybe they'll say, well, maybe it doesn't have to be in Jackson Park. Maybe we can put it somewhere else.
West Side. And they could do a West Side development, too. They were talking about that, west of the United Center.
Yeah, North Lawndale, there were a couple of sites thrown out for consideration. So.
And this group said they'll drop the lawsuit altogether, didn't they, if they move the site off of, what, the lakefront? Was that what the deal was?
To protect our parks?
Yeah.
No, they'd have no standing.
No, I was reading.
No, they do have standing to sue. That's what the judge ruled today. That's why the suit can proceed.
But if they pull off, they would have no standing if they
right.
pull
they,
off
it wouldn't
Jackson
be
Park.
The same public land if they went to sort of city-owned property or private property or something like that.
Right. That's fine. But yeah. It's that this is public property, and they say that the city had no right to turn it over for $10 for 99 years to essentially a private foundation.
All right, Garfield Park, here we come.
All right,
thank you, Lisa. Appreciate
thanks, Lisa.
It.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right.
Okay, take care.
All right, we're gonna fight with Justin Kaufman after this because he's with all of the hippies who want to stop this thing.
He doesn't want. I mean, yeah, we'll hear what he has to say.
Yeah, he's going to be joining us in just a moment, but first, let's find out from Ryan Burrow, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
And Aurora officials just gave an update on their shooting investigation. We'll have more on that coming up.
Okay, we're going to play some hippie music because we have the ultimate hippie joining us, Justin Kaufman from The Morning Show here on 720 WGN.
You remembered his name, Ro. Good job.
I know. That's how I just remember it because the music cues me. The story is a matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way at the top of the hour. And before we get started with Justin, let me do something that's commercial. It'll drive him nuts that I'm going to do this. I'm going to give away a pair of tickets to the Hawks taking on the Dallas Stars. Now, he likes it that I'm giving it away because he's one of those socialists that they keep talking about, on the news.
Spread the wealth?
Yeah, spreading the wealth. But I'm giving away. But this is an actual commercial concern here, the Chicago Blackhawks, courtesy of another commercial concern, Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. Listen for your chance to win tickets all regular season long. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200 rips us off. All right. Okay, Vladimir, why don't you explain to me what's happening here? We just heard from Crane Chicago. They were able to give us a good, sort of rundown of, what the actual story is. But why would you not want the city of Chicago to help build the Obama Presidential Center in Jackson Park?
Well, first of all, good to talk to you guys. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Justin.
I wanted to say, if you could do the voice again, the liberal do-gooder voice.
Yeah.
I want to hear that voice again.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. If you actually put the Lucas Museum in the South parking lot, that's going to obstruct the yellow-bellied warbler is living there
now. That's his impression of you, Justin. That's what I'm hearing
here. Yeah, I think
here.
It's good.
The common house fly and the enlarged mosquito also will be unhomed.
All right, what's the point of this?
This all stems from during the Lucas Museum, when I was doing the download app, we had a crosstalk that got contentious because I argued that you should not be doing private business on public land.
Right.
You flipped out because it was right after the Carnival Wagon and you had three or four drinks and you were you were already slurring your speech. But in this case, I want to make it very clear. I am for the Obama Presidential Center. I think that it's awesome. The plans look amazing. The problem is, once again, the city has moved forward in promising public land to a private entity, which has been knocked down in court. It's like the mayor does not pay attention to precedent. So it gives the opportunity for the Protect Our Parks to come in and win this and set back everybody who was very excited about having this here. So I don't necessarily think it's a problem. I'll get into the whole specifics about private and public land if you want to, but I think this has to do with the city just sort of, you know, flipping its nose, flipping its finger at the precedent that's been set, and now here we are once again with possibly a project that won't go forward. And I just find that to be absolutely somewhat insulting to the Chicago people. There are plenty of open spaces on the south side of Chicago. There are plenty of open spaces on the west side. Why do you need to take Jackson Park? Why the park that has been there, that is protected parkland, do we need to build something and completely destroy it? I don't understand that.
It's 20 acres that to me. Of the 500 acres.
I understand, but I am a futurist in the way that I think about the country in 100 years from now, when we all gas and pollution and it's idiocracy everywhere, and we're like, man, I wish we had that park, but instead we got this Taco Bell in Jackson Park.
Oh, instead we have this. Instead we have the Obama Center
for the international first black relationships. President.
That is the tribute right to the first black president of the United States of America. Oh my God!
The early plans for the Jackson Park, they said, the Obama Center said, we're gonna do this as an ode to the park. This is going to be a lot of green space. You're not even going to notice that this is a center. It's going to be the park with a center in it. And when the plans came to, the final plans, and this is when Protect Our Parks got involved, doesn't look anything like that. There's a lot of parking garages and not as much green space as promised.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I think that you run a risk of...
Andrew Jackson!
I think there's a lot of GM listeners out there. Road,
this is a park. This is a park named after Andrew Jackson, right? Who was a slave owner!
Who cares?
Get out!
Who cares what it's named? It's green space in a big city. You gotta have green space.
I am not gonna sit here and listen to this communist tell me how I'm gonna run the park district of the city of Chicago. We have got Ryan Burrow standing by. He's got the WGN
Thanks,
News
Justin.
Coming your way in 2 minutes. From Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Bro, if you can't face everything going on, you could decide to be Karl Lagerfeld's cat's minder. Choupette might inherit $150 million.
Yeah. What?
Well, Karl Lagerfeld's passing has made his Choupette cat the next of kin in many ways, and he's got an Instagram account with 130,000 followers. The cat does, so you'd have to manage that. And his roughly almost $200 million, I guess, he stands to potentially inherit.
Oh, okay.
So you could do that.
I just don't want to be a cat. Is the cat's name Choupette, or is that a
Choupette
type of...
Choupette is the name of the cat.
Okay, it's not an actual type of a cat.
No, Choupette. Oh, it's his name. He's
for God's sake. I almost said a bad word again.
The designers might leave most of his fortune to his feline.
Okay.
His little kitty.
Now, what happens when the cat dies? What happens then? Where does that money go?
I don't know. I don't know.
Does the cat have a will? What happens with the cat?
The cat's got everything, it seems like. I mean, the cat's got a very lush lifestyle, very lavish. That's
fantastic.
And a lot of followers on social media.
Okay.
So, that could happen.
I hope.
He needs a minder.
There is a follow-on plan.
Yeah.
I'm very allergic, though. I would do it. I would do that for $150 million, though.
I think I would too. Just sort of mind the cat.
I know. Karl Lagerfeld was an international institution, though. When you stop and think about what he did, and the what his impact is. I hate to get into the whole "Devil Wears Prada" speech. It's cerulean, but whatever. It is a very his change on internet, the way that humans dressed internationally is pretty amazing. So he will be missed by his cat, apparently. He's the only person who will miss
his cat.
Him.
Might be very happy too. Yeah.
Exactly. I wonder if he wore his own cologne. Do you always smell like Lagerfeld? That's the thought I had when I saw the news today.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Oh, talk about your on-air auditions for a job. Remember when they claimed that the guy who became the refrigerator-looking guy,
mm-hmm.
who became the acting attorney general, was auditioning for the job on CNN?
Whitaker?
Well, Mark Garagos, the famed attorney, came to international prominence during the OJ trial 25 years ago now. He was auditioning to be Jesse Smollett's attorney last night on Anderson Cooper.
How'd that work out?
This turns out it's a hoax, something like this. I mean, it hurts people of color. It hurts gay people. It hurts anybody who is, you know, a victim of a biased crime.
If it's not a hoax, it hurts him, because if it's not a hoax and he's a victim, he's being re-victimized.
Okay, being re-victimized. And then he goes after the police department.
I generally resist, as you know, over the years. Anytime you start to get law enforcement drip, drip, drip leaks, that to me is a telltale sign that something else is going on here. I don't for a minute believe, and I think it's ludicrous to believe, that the police tracked these two down through the grainy photograph. I don't think that's what happened.
Oh, come on!
Spoken like a true defense attorney.
Oh my God! They did. They looked. They put 12 detectives on this.
Yeah, a lot of hours.
And as Garagos very well knows, there are now digital fingerprints everywhere. You can track anybody who's got a cell phone or a credit card anywhere.
That's right.
And they said it was the Uber or the ride sharing records is what actually led them to the men.
And
they
these were able to guys track that way. Admitted that that's them.
And they also, CPD is now looking into this tip that they were seen in the elevator with Jesse the night of the attack.
Yeah, that CPD has just said that was unfounded. They investigated that today. We just got that a few moments ago.
You did.
But they,
AP
yeah.
was reporting it. Like
yeah,
an hour
yeah.
ago.
It looks like they've discounted that.
Okay. All right. Now, then Garagos suggested the leaks are coming from the police themselves.
I think that the cooperation of Smollett is precisely why they have these two. My guess would be is they find their phone numbers. They know that they have a connection, and they arrested two guys and they put them in custody for 2 days because there was an enormous amount of pressure to solve the crime. Does that mean Smollett was in cahoots with them? I haven't seen anything except leaks. According to law enforcement sources, to me, that screams out somebody who's trying to manipulate something.
All right. Good luck.
They're also investigating that letter that was sent, the threatening letter that preceded the attack by several weeks, because whoever sent that is, they might want to talk to, too.
Checking in. Don't get me started. Four.
Number four.
Bernie's back.
Bernie Sanders is running for president. Sanders announced his intentions during an interview on Vermont. Of course he did. On Vermont Public Radio. Of course.
I think what a president has got to do is bring our people together, not divide us up. And that's certainly one reason I'm running. And the second reason is we began the political revolution in the 2016 campaign. And now it's time to move that revolution forward and make sure that those ideas are implemented into policy.
Mm-hmm. Received $1 million in donations in less than 4 hours after announcing his candidacy. Most of those, Roe, in small denominations. Remember the $27
thing? That's right. Every donation was 17 cents. That's all I wanted. If everybody gave me 17 cents around the world, even though I cannot accept a donation outside the contiguous United States.
Sure.
All right. Bernie? Let me just tell you what a bad idea this is. It's such a bad idea that Donald Trump thinks it's a good idea.
Oh, Bernie Sanders is running, yeah. That's right. Personally, I think he missed his time, but I like Bernie because he is one person that, you know, on trade, he sort of would agree on trade. I'm being very tough on trade. He was tough on trade. The problem is he doesn't know what to do about it. We're doing something very spectacular on trade, but I wish Bernie well.
Yeah, but wait, it gets better.
What happened to Bernie maybe was not so nice. I think he was taken advantage of. He ran great 4 years ago. And he was not treated with respect by Clinton. And that was too bad. I thought what happened to Bernie Sanders 4 years ago was quite sad as it pertains to our country. So we'll see how he does. You got a lot of people running, but only one person's going to win. I hope you know who that person is.
No, for...
I don't know
again.
How you're going to handle it. I just don't.
Okay.
I don't know.
It is a funny thing.
All
though.
These candidates taking fire from Donald Trump.
It is funny when Donald Trump goes that he'll treat him with disrespect. because they were opponents politically. Because I remember Donald Trump was so respectful to his opponents and even to his opponents' spouses.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I mean, Ted Cruz comes to mind, so many others.
This guy is telling Hillary Clinton that she was disrespectful? I mean, I gotta go. I'll get to your 3, your 2, and a 1, but first, Ryan, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the news?
You know, gas prices are going up, bro. They just are.
And WGN. Then there's this. Why does Chicago vote for mayor in the middle of winter? Turns out it's contentious. The reason why WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
Yeah, because they don't want people going out. They don't want nobody sent to come vote.
Control, like, the population.
You
voting public.
Saying? Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see if that's the reason.
That's watch tonight. You know that's the reason. We're from this town.
I know.
Number 3.
7-year-old boy has gone viral in a community in northwest Austin, Texas, where he set up a hot chocolate stand to raise money to build Donald Trump's border wall. Benton Stevens says all he wanted to do was help, but it has not been easy.
1,300 something, because I want our town to be safe. We were making a hot chocolate stand. I was against helping Donald Trump, and then I saw the State of the Union address, and I wanted to help him. Some people were mad and calling me a little Hitler and stuff, and then some people were really happy. Well, I like all people.
I would like his parents to be taken into custody, because whoever is putting this kid up to it, he's 7 years old. Come on. Come on.
Yeah. Calling them names like that, though, it just always crosses a line for the little kids.
The parents here, little Benton's parents, are politically active members of the Republican National Committee, and they say they like to keep their kids aware of their political stance.
He just said, "Dad, I want to do a stand to help Trump raise money for the wall."
He came up with the wording. He came up with the amount.
We are obviously conservative, so we have certain news stations on, and he hears what we talk about at the dinner table.
Somehow it's gotten skewed to think that we're teaching our son to hate, and I don't understand where that comes from.
Oh, you might want to just sit down and think about that.
You can get a Beto marshmallow for free, a large Pelosi marshmallow for 50 cents to melt into your hot chocolate.
So you melt the marshmallow. See, that's where the hate part comes in right there. Okay.
It's getting so much attention.
Right. Okay. But believe me, if he were going the other way, if he was trying to build a Bernie Sanders hot chocolate stand, he'd be all over Hannity.
Number 2.
Chadwick Boseman is preparing for the 61st Annual Academy Awards on Sunday, where his film Black Panther, nominated for 7 awards. Boseman says a win in one category is a win for the entire unit.
I think it would be it's meaningful anytime any film is acknowledged, and any part of a film, whether it be behind the scenes, design, director, performers, it's always meaningful to be acknowledged by the Academy. It would be amazing, especially because Marvel has never had that happen before with a film, with one of their films.
I just want to tell you something.
Uh-oh.
Liam Neeson here.
Oh. We've missed you, Liam.
If those bastards win, I'm going to just lose it. I got my cush, and I'm going to rush the stage. I don't care if he's a panther or not. He's black, and I'm going to hit him in the head.
Thankfully, I don't think he'll be there this year.
Right, they're going to have to tie him down, actually.
Liam shows up at the Oscars. Liam, let's just check your credentials here. Right. Do you really have a legit access pass?
He's in movies.
Let's see your lanyard.
He's in movies this year. He's in the Academy. He could probably be there.
He's a voter.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one movie I didn't vote for.
Jeez. Oh,
that or the Black Klansman or anything like that.
Oh, boy. All right. Enough of that. Mm-hmm. Oh, poor Liam. All right, and finally,
Number 1.
Now that Manny Machado has signed with the Padres, Sox fans are not the only ones upset. This young Yankee fan at spring training today learned about it and then had a reaction that has since gone viral.
Manny Machado just signed a $300 million deal with the Padres.
Oh, I don't want to go to the Yankees!
Why not?
I don't want anybody
for the 80s. I don't want Bogarts. I don't want Betts. I don't want Donaldson. I don't want any of those guys. I mean, you can take any other guy in the league. I just don't want anybody. I mean, you're not going to take a guy you hate from another team.
Hey, Brett.
It's kind of like taking Tom Brady from the Patriots and adding him to the Dolphins. It just doesn't happen.
I'm with him. I think he's right entirely. Yeah.
Kid's got some hot takes.
Yeah, I know, really. Put him up with Stephen A. I mean, the two of them. People are upset about this. Roy kind of sounds a little bit like you at the beginning of this program, actually. At 3:07 today, this afternoon. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
People not taking this lightly, all easily.
Right. All right, let us, and everybody's going, San Diego has a baseball team?
I know.
That's the reaction everybody has.
Nobody talked about San Diego.
All right, let's close this thing up. Sniff. Oh, man.
The top five at five.
All right, it is 1 week from the mayoral election.
Can you believe it?
Yes.
Finally here.
Yes, I can, because I'm seeing the commercials. And I got to say, there are some commercials I just do not understand. The LaShawn Ford commercial, I can't figure it out. I'm not sure what he's... At some point, I'm like, oh, yeah. He's running for mayor. John Fritchie, former Cook County Commissioner, now just an attorney. And thank God for that, because that Cook County Commissioner job, I never, I've known you a long time, John, I never liked that job. You're going to tell us what you think is happening here. I'm going to make the prediction of who's going to win a week from tonight.
Ooh.
You're a brave soul.
Yep. I got it all figured out.
I feel like anything could happen in this race.
I want you to write it down right now. Write it down right now. You ready?
All right, let's write it down.
What is today? Today is the 20th. No, 19th. 19th of February. 19th mm-hmm. of February.
1 week for election day.
1 week to go.
Okay.
The two top contenders with less than 50% plus one will be Bill Daley and Willie Wilson. That is my prediction, and I'm standing by it.
Here's the problem. I've been to the Arlington Million with you.
I've listened
to your predictions.
That's true. You were at Maywood Park even with me once.
How'd that go?
Yeah, it didn't go well. We were like in ninth grade and we shouldn't have been there. All right, so let's talk about, tell me why I'm wrong.
I'm not positive that you're wrong. I mean, this thing is so wide open right now that I don't think anybody can say anything with a certainty. I mean, you're talking about a situation where...
Which of the top four, though, are Daley, Preckwinkle, Mendoza, and Wilson?
I don't know about that. I think Lori Lightfoot, who I think a lot of people were discounting a few weeks ago, has been coming on strong at the right time.
The NBC poll put her up highest that we've seen.
The NBC poll, she's getting a lot of press. She got a gift handed to her yesterday when she got her press conference crashed. Mm-hmm. And so I think, it's coming together. It's really who does this at the, really at the end. I've said from the beginning, Willie Wilson probably has 10% of the vote baked in from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And people are going to start to say, who are their alternatives? I think the one reason why you may not get what a lot of people are predicting, which is a Preckwinkle-Daley matchup, is that a lot of people are going to say just that. I don't want a Preckwinkle-Daley matchup, so I'm going to go to somebody else who's viable. So who do they see as viable? Probably Mendoza. Possibly Lightfoot. And so it cuts
I think that all
right there.
I think that all splits itself up. That all goes down into a sieve, essentially. And I think that's one of the things. Now, we had John Cass on yesterday. John Cass is, a firm believer that it's a matchup race and that some of these people are in this just to suck votes away from other people.
I'm shocked he sees a conspiracy.
That never happens.
That has never happened in this town, especially if you run for judge and there's four guys with the same last name. But I wonder if there is some magic to that. I think that Daley is spending the most amount of money.
He just got another $1 million from billionaire hedge fund Ken Griffin.
It's a good difference.
Another million. So he's up at over $8 million. How much does money matter here at this final stretch?
Well, this late stretch, I mean, all the candidates have bought the airtime that they're going to buy. Ro, I think you're right as far as who hurts.
Oh, you can preempt.
As far as who hurts who right now, you know, again, you know, every vote, let's say that it's coming out of the 19th ward and they're leading in the early voting. You know, those are Jerry Joyce voters. Those Jerry Joyce voters may well have been Bill Daley voters before they were going to be Preckwinkle or Mendoza or Lightfoot voters.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're seeing that, I think, in a lot of different areas. But again, polling is meaningless right now. I think that the money is somewhat meaningless. And it's who can get the biggest chunk out of the undecided voters. 20% of the voters are undecided.
And where do you think that now that undecided number there, that's kind of across the board, though, right? So their motivations all may be different.
I would say that if you look at the candidates that are up in the top tier, I think Preckwinkle voters have been with her from the beginning, and you really haven't seen her numbers fluctuate at all. Probably the same thing could be said about Bill Daley.
I think that's one of her problems.
Well, that's just it. So when you look at the undecideds, I don't think you're going to see a lot of undecideds who suddenly find themselves drawn to Tony Preckwinkle,
mm-hmm.
or necessarily to Bill Daley. So these are people that are looking at what are my alternatives to what they see as the past.
Okay, here's where I'm going to disagree with you. That, yes, I agree with the premise that undecideds are probably not going to break with the bigger names unless they go to the safety play. And I think that more people will go to Bill Daley on the safety play than will go to Tony Preckwinkle on the safety play, which puts him in the top two, I think.
I think that's right. It's tough for somebody at the last minute to say, you know what? I like the person who raised $500 million in sales taxes, tried to do $200 million in soda taxes. That's not where they're going to want to go.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're for a lot of reasons. And he's coming out. I think there's a lot of people who are, they want a steady hand here. They realize that, you know, voters, despite the fact that politicians constantly talk down to voters and think that they're stupid, mm-hmm. there are, and yes, there are a lot of stupid people out there. I know it. I'm one of them. But there are people who are sophisticated who think and stop and you know, they live in the city or they live wherever they live. They want their streets to be safe, clean, schools good, that kind of stuff. We do not want to be Detroit, even though Detroit's on the comeback. We don't want to be in a situation like that.
Well,
and that's where you go, and that's where, you know, sort of the father figure starts to play into this play.
Well, I think the biggest or the most impressive thing to me, I've said this the last couple times on the show, is Bill Daley getting so many people not to look at him as a Daley,
mm-hmm.
but to look at him kind of in his own right, which a lot of people, myself included, didn't think was going to be able to happen.
Well, I think he's playing himself as a different Daley. He's not totally giving up the Daley thing because he needs that imprimatur of being a guy who's got people and don't worry. They're ready on day one. There won't be any issues here. Right. I'm good. I'm solid.
But now, I'm not a career politician is what he's saying. Like my family members.
Right. I didn't take a dime yet is basically what he's saying. And so now you go to, and I don't think Preckwinkle is going to have that. And I think you're going
to
see some shenanigans next week. Still a story. It depends. I mean, I think for the general, people were waiting on if Tony were in the general to start dropping some of these other stories about things that are going on in the county and her office and stuff like that. You just wonder if there's polling that shows that she's close. If you see that next week, Mendoza. Mendoza was my sort of my hot take early on.
Yeah, she was your early pick. That's
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that she's, you know, she seemed to have the organization. Why isn't she as and we don't know yet where she's going to end up, but I don't think she's run the kind of race I expected her to.
Well, I'll disagree with you in part. She came out to a strong start. I think she stumbled by getting put on defense, but I think she couldn't have predicted. The Solis thing, the Burke thing, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the Burke thing really got blown somewhat out of proportion with her, but I think she's really turned it around. She's come on strong. If you watched the debate last night, I think she came across as the clear winner. And that's why I think Susanna's in a really nice position now, because a lot of people who don't want to see a Daley Preckwinkle matchup per se are going to look, and they're going to look at the polls and the stories and say, who's the most viable person that can keep that from happening? And I think a lot of people are going to go to Susanna, and that's why I talk about the importance of the undecideds right now.
You said we know Preckwinkle has the name recognition, and you said baked in support. Do you think she's been damaged by this process? Has she lost momentum at all because of what's been happening and the attacks against her as well as a front runner?
Oh, I think she definitely has. I mean, keep in mind, you know, her past couple of elections, she ran against Todd Strozier, then against Bob Fioretti. That's not this kind of race, and she's been taking what is the smart and safe route, which is really just staying out of sight, not doing interviews.
Yeah,
and just kind of keeping her head down. But, You know, it's going to happen in the runoff, assuming she makes the runoff. There's a lot of stuff out there. You know, there's nobody in this field or probably in politics that you can't find some baggage on or tie them to something. But when you've been in office for almost a quarter century like she has, there's going to be a lot of things out there.
She has, she's like that, those airport vehicles that have all the bags on them, you know, to pull up to the plane. She's like four of them with 747s right now, because the county is a mess in a lot of ways. And there's a, and things that may not even be in her purview are going to get attached to her for this. So that's, I think the, I think you're going to see, I think some of that's going to start spilling out next week late. Although there may be this thought that if you just mention her name, that draws attention to her.
Well, that's part of it. And, you know, things are different with early voting now. You can't necessarily wait until right before election day to drop
some
bomb.
What's the percentage, do you think? Do you know?
For turnout or early voting?
Early voting.
Early voting's running just behind where it has in the last cycle.
Which is about what percentage of the vote?
I couldn't even, you know.
25% or something.
I was going to say in the low 20s.
Yeah.
But they, you know, it's always the last week that is the...
Could be consequential in this,
is the heaviest week. Oh, absolutely.
And Willie Wilson. Let's talk about Willie Wilson.
Dr. Wilson.
Just ask him. He has been in these debates. He's fun. He's interesting. He is. There's no more genuine a human running for any of this. You see everybody a little bit hiding behind their own eyes. Not Willie Wilson. And I think that there are people who are going to vote for him. I think that if African Americans in the city of Chicago are looking for someone to vote for, I don't think they necessarily track with Tony as much as they will with Willie Wilson. And on a low turnout election, which this might be depending on the weather next week, the churches motivate. The churches always, they provide transportation, they provide the buses, they get the people out to the polling places, and I think he's locked up the church vote.
He can do that, and even though Dorothy Brown endorsed Amara, you got to keep in mind that, you know, Dorothy has her segment of voters as well, and I will guarantee you that Dorothy is not telling those people to vote for Tony.
Right. So wherever they're going to
go. I just wonder, because you don't have an incumbent, and you have so many candidates, and there's been so much more interest, because it doesn't feel like there's one shoo-in here or anything like that, that I wonder if we'll see more turnout. Do you think it'll be higher than usual?
Well, I thought the early voting would have been higher, not just because of this race, but you've got some hotly contested mayoral races as well.
Aldermanic races.
Aldermanic. Yeah, those two.
Yeah.
up on the north side, and those numbers really haven't been that high, but will say that this will be close enough that I think, you know, we will not have the answer on Tuesday night.
I'll tell you.
Interesting.
Oh, very interesting prediction.
I think you're going to be looking at absentee ballots, you know, potentially a recount. There's going to be a really small number, but I think, of votes between number two and number three.
Let me throw something at you. I think that we're going to have there's going to be lower turnout, because I think of that 40% that's now undecided, that half of them don't show up. Because they just don't know what to do.
Well, it's 20% undecided, and let's assume that the turnout among them is the same turnout as the rest of the field who have gotten behind candidates. But, you know, you're right. There could be folks in that undecided where they say, you know what, I'm just
they have aldermen that are already
I got nothing. Right. But when you do these polls, they're supposed to be likely voters. So before you even get to the candidate choices, they say, you know, do you intend on voting?
John Fritchie, could you hold on 1 second for us? Because I want to ask you about the city treasurer race that nobody knows anything about, except it's interesting. There is a guy in this race that is kind of nationally famous because he made a big stand. And he was on this show a number of times. He was on CNN. He was on other places. So it's kind of – and what does the treasurer do in the first place? John will be able to answer that question.
Thank God somebody can.
He's, no man has lived or breathed Chicago politics like John Fritchie has, and he will explain that to us coming up in just a moment. He's choking to death on it right now as we speak. Let's check in with Ryan Burrow.
Okay?
What's coming up at the top of the hour?
Governor Pritzker says his administration is reviewing how the gunman who killed five coworkers in Aurora Warehouse got his weapon.
Ryan Burrow has got the WGN News coming your way from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Just a few minutes. John Fritchie is with us. The Honorable John Fritchie is what his title is, which has always freaked me out. He, former state rep, former Cook County Commissioner, now an attorney. Let us, always an attorney, I suppose. Now, let me ask you this question, John, as we get ready here. The city treasurer's race, I'm seeing commercials for these people whose names I do not know. It's Pawar. He was an alderman, mm-hmm. right?
Still is.
I'm confusing him with some other dude that I was that I thought was nationally known. And then this Melissa
Conyers Irvin,
and she's Jason Irvin's wife, right?
She, well, you know, she may like to say that, you know, Jason's her husband.
But, yes.
So she is a state rep right now on, mm-hmm. on the west side of the city. Her husband's the alderman in that area as well.
Okay. All right. So power couple.
Peter Garapi.
Peter Garapi rhymes with therapy. He's a CPA in the race. He ran for Cook County Treasurer against Maria Pappas in the last cycle and is in this race right now. And then, again, you know, Alderman Pawar, who has my respect. He said he was going to run for two terms as alderman. He did that. His second term's finishing up. And
voluntarily just stepped aside.
Voluntarily stepped aside. He's running for this now. He's brought forward some interesting ideas as far as a public bank. And really, so getting to, you know, what the treasurer does.
And ran for governor for 14 minutes.
He ran for governor briefly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, listen, I, you know, in full disclosure, you know, I think the absolute world of Amaya. I've worked alongside him. I know who he is personally. And so okay. That's it. I've got nothing but good things to say about him. But the job of the treasurer.
Yeah, what do they do?
It's really, you're investing in being the safeguarder of the city's funds before they disappear one way or the other.
But, do we have funds?
So, and what does the city clerk do? Wait, yeah. Very quickly, I got about a minute left. What is? Right, so I'm looking at the ballot. So you got all these people running for mayor. Right? You got to figure out who they are. Then you got the city clerk.
City stickers, dog tags, things along those lines.
All right, and we got three people I never heard of.
Anna Valencia and two others who have arguably been thrown off the ballot already. The challenges are still pending.
All right, Anna Valencia is the legit, as far as you're concerned?
Absolutely, and she would be even if she had the opponents.
Okay. Oh, all right. And then you get your different ward. And you people are on your own when it comes to the wards because you know the crooks that you put in there before. Hey, why is it such a big deal up in 50 with Joe Moore? I've never seen aldermanic commercials like I'm seeing up there.
Joe's in 49. And,
I mean, that's what I meant.
No, it's a fascinating race. The woman he's running against actually used to be a supporter of his and felt that he went kind of too much towards siding
with
the
mayor. But they're spending real money. Where are they getting that money?
They're spending real money. He's been a aggressive fundraiser for a long time. You know, and I see him all the time right now on CNN, I think ESPN.
Why? But these jobs don't pay that much. How and how powerful is an alderman? Oh, I already know the answer to that. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry for even asking. All right, John, we'll talk to you a couple times now before the election next Tuesday. And then on Tuesday, oh, my gosh. I can't believe it's right around the corner. We've got Ryan Burrow in the WGN Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. Kevin in the desert. I'm here. Yeah, I got. Hold on.
Is it nice and warm in the desert?
I got. Before you answer that question, I got convention. Speaking of nice and warm, July, Chicago, nice and warm.
Like that.
Hawks convention tickets, passes. I've got for the Hawks convention, which is going to be held July 26th through the 28th at the beautiful Hilton Chicago. It's the 2019 Blackhawks Convention presented by Magellan Corporation on sale now. I've got your free passes. Stand by. Giving those to you in just a few minutes. But first, Kevin is in the desert, and Kevin has been crying his eyes out. And
very
he keeps
upsetting
saying, it's just
day.
Dry. It's just dry out here, isn't it?
Allergies. It's hot this time of year,
mm-hmm.
especially in the desert.
All the dust.
All those special plant life.
Yeah, about
dust.
That Manny Machado. Can we replay that kid, that Yankees fan, about Manny Machado that we played in the top 5 at 5? Because this is exactly how Kevin sounded about, what was it, about 11 o'clock Chicago time this hit? Maybe something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, yeah. That was announced that Manny Machado was going to a team that until a week ago nobody knew wanted a baseball team, the San Diego Padres. Listen to this kid who is a Yankees fan who finds out about this.
Manny Machado just signed a $300 million deal with the Padres.
I don't want to follow the Yankees!
Why not?
I don't want anybody for the Yankees! I don't want Bogarts! I don't want Betts! I don't want Donaldson! I don't want any of those guys! You can take any other guy in the league. I just don't want anybody. I mean, you're not going to take a guy you hate from another
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just doesn't happen.
Just got a good point.
I think, I think that was one of my program directors years ago. Anyway.
It sounds like a young Rokan.
Yeah.
There you go. And another thing.
Making a point in second grade.
Let's call on Rokan. Pro?
So,
the back row?
Let me just ask you, Kevin. Now that Machado is a Padre.
God, that's hard to hear.
What do the White Sox do?
Well, Rick Hahn was not happy this afternoon. Kenny Williams was stunned this afternoon. There are some players out there, and I also just want to say that, you know, going into this free, it's been two free agencies now that have been really slow. I mean, camp has broke all throughout baseball, and Machado and Harper hadn't signed. There's still dozens of guys out there
as well.
Yeah,
but Machado got his money.
Machado, so that's my point. Everyone keeps talking about, oh, collusion. The owners are colluding so they don't have to pay the players, and this is horrible for baseball. And I'm like, Manny Machado just got $300 million. And Bryce Harper is probably going to get more than that. So two players are going to be paid probably around $600 million this offseason.
Jeez.
So I think we can kind of put that to rest a little bit. I don't know for sure what the White Sox are going to do. I think right now they're pretty content with what they have. They made some moves in this offseason to add a few relievers here and there. They've got just about a full starting rotation for now, and I think they've got enough outfielders and infielders where the team's kind of just starting to take shape here. I'm really interested to see if they go back and really try to win over Bryce Harper. I really am, because this is just sort of worst-case scenario for the White Sox. I said this earlier, too, where in so many other free agencies, you see the Yankees just outbid everyone, right? Like, nobody's even close to them. The Red Sox maybe come in and blow everybody out of the water. This is the White Sox and Padres for a guy who's on a fast track to the Hall of Fame, who's in his prime, who's one of the best players in all of baseball, and he lost out to the Padres. Like, that stings a lot for the White Sox. So I wonder how motivated Rick Hahn was very upset today. He was very frustrated with himself, he said. He said it starts with him. He said, you know, for a while there, Kenny Williams, the way this all unfolded, we were out on the practice fields just watching them take batting practice and grounders, and they're running the bases, and all of a sudden, everybody's phone starts blowing up, and we see Kenny Williams drive his golf cart over to one of the fields, and he walks up to Rick Renteria, and you see him talking behind one of the batting cages, and Renteria's, you know, shoulders kind of slumped down a little bit, his head drops a little bit, and then Kenny got back in his golf cart, and we walked over and talked to him, and he was distraught, just like many White Sox fans. He's like, I'm leaving my sunglasses on. I don't want you guys to see how upset I am right now.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of how it all unfolded, and he had learned basically from a tweet, just like everybody else. But the White Sox had just met with Machado's agent yesterday one last time, and Kenny Williams said this morning they were all kind of talking, and even one position coach came up to us right after the news broke, and he was like, what happened? And we told him, and he's like, wow, we were all talking this morning in the office before we came out here that we really thought today was the day they were going to sign Manny Machado.
Do you think Bryce Harper goes quickly after this, now that sort of the market's been set and that number is obtainable? And do we hear an announcement about him soon?
That's a good question. I mean, right now, it seems he and the Phillies are the ones engaging in contract talks. So I don't know if that speeds things up or slows things down, because they both can take their time at this point and really hammer out something that works for both sides. Now, Harper's not going to take anything less than $300 million. I can tell you that right now. If Manny Machado got $300, Harper's going to get $300 and probably even more. That's sort of when this whole thing kicked off.
The Sox offered Manny Machado more money, essentially, than the Padres
guaranteed.
Did. But less guaranteed. So what's guaranteed in the Machado deal with San Diego? Do we know?
Every penny.
Every penny.
Manny Machado is worth $300 million.
Does he have to play all 10 years or just the...
Yeah, yeah. The only way you end up... In baseball, it's all 100% guaranteed. The only way he's going to forfeit any of this is if there was just some sort of weird suspension or something like that. But, I mean, the way baseball works, you get guaranteed money with these things. So, the more reports have come out this afternoon about what the White Sox really did offer Machado. And right now, from what we've seen from reports, it sounds like 8 years and $250 million, which is actually more per year than what he's going to make with the Padres. And then on top of that, because right when we broke this news to Kenny Williams, the report I saw, he goes, you know, our deal could potentially be worth a pretty good amount more than what Machado got offered. Mm-hmm. But I think Machado saw 300 guaranteed. It's hard to pass that up. But basically for the White Sox, it was 8 years, $250 million. And now more reports are coming out today that that also had two team options on the ninth and tenth year, $35 million per year. So let's say the Sox were to have picked up each one of those years. That's an extra $70 million on top of the $250. That's $320 million right there. There were also reports that based off of performance, how many games he played, things like that were incentives. A lot of contracts have incentives or escalators
and Manny,
built into the contract.
Manny
could have went up all the way to $350 million.
Okay, so $350 million at 10 years, though. And Manny gets an out. He's got $300 million for 10 years, getting $30 million a year. But he's but he gets out of the deal at, on his decision at 5 years in case the market, if he wants to change the market.
Right. Right.
All right. So yeah, that's where that comes in. That's that, in the Padres deal. All right. Yeah. So, gone. He's gone. He's gone. For, you know, I'll be honest with you.
Didn't like him anyway.
Now that he's gone, I don't like him.
No.
I didn't like him.
New York and Amazon. We never need him anyways.
Right.
No, now we need
your
him.
Your problem,
we
New York.
No,
hey, no, no, no,
no. No, we want him. No, we want them
no,
back.
No, we want him.
No, wait. No, hold on. The one thing about Manny Machado, though, was that when I was thinking about this in the beginning of the offseason, I was like, well, I think Bryce Harper is kind of a better fit. But and also Bryce Harper is sort of like the all-American guy, and Manny Machado's got a little bit of a, you know, sort of the
right,
a little
polar
bit of,
opposite.
Yeah, personality,
the bad guy, you know, he's the guy, that slides into second base, spikes up, but right. You know, if he's on your team, you love him, but the whole rest of the league hates him, kind
right.
of thing.
Plus, his whole family was here. It's a great storyline.
Yeah, well, we hired his whole family.
They hired his whole family.
They're all from Miami originally, but we moved them up here.
They lived through the polar vortex.
Yeah.
So, now Manny's not coming.
Right. So
they're upset.
Now that the Bryce Harper deal, and it's all but certain he was going to go to Philadelphia, but it was all but certain that the Sox were going to be able to get Manny Machado. Is there a way the Sox go, listen, we cannot walk away from this offseason after saying that we were going to go out and get one of these big guys, big guys?
I mean, considering that the largest contract the White Sox have ever given out or signed somebody to is Jose Abreu at about $70 million. It's not that they haven't offered bigger deals. Remember back when even A-Rod got that massive deal in, 2000? There was reports they offered close to $200 million because A-Rod got $250 or something crazy
like
that.
Okay, but
so,
they're willing
like
to
they
do it. They're willing to do it.
Right,
the question
that's the
is,
thing, you know.
Do they want to go for broke here because they want to make a statement to Major League Baseball and they want to start getting on the schedule, you know, for the big games of the week and that kind of thing so that when there's, you know, options at the network level, and again, it's all going to change, but it's just about in this year, before the baseball television contract comes to an end, and you see these teams start to move into different, like the Cubs have just announced they're going into an over-the-top, or you're going to have to buy for a subscription to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Before you do that, you better prove a product.
It's
right.
True.
Right? That's the thing. Now, the
Very
Cubs
true.
Already have a provable product. I can't believe it's how the world has changed. But they have a provable product. The White Sox have to have a provable product so that people will pay extra to watch them.
True.
It's a very good point. Like we were talking about earlier, if you do miss on Harper and Machado, you better pray that all these prospects you've put together into your farm system start panning out. Now, the thing with this year is that I think a lot of us are expecting them to be a lot better than last year. Last year, they lost 100 games. And they haven't had a winning season since 2012. But you kind of get the sense right now here in camp that the urgency is to start winning and winning some meaningful games here. And I don't know if they're there quite yet, but this was the year where it felt like if you did get Machado, I'm not going to say one player's worth X amount of wins, but even if he individually isn't worth those wins, think of what that does for the clubhouse. Think of what that does for everybody else's game. Think about the pressure it takes off some of the guys. So, look, I think seeing how upset the White Sox were today and really how stunned they were that they missed out on Machado,
mm-hmm.
I don't see any reason why they wouldn't at least go back into heavily pursuing Bryce Harper. I don't. I don't know why they wouldn't go after Harper.
But I thought that the quote from the White Sox was, we couldn't reach that $300 million number. And as you're pointing out, Bryce Harper's got to go for more.
Well, that's sort of what
at least the same.
That's true. That's what Kenny Williams initially said. That was his very quick reaction to what the reports were that came out. This was like talking to him 5 minutes
I
after.
See, but you're saying the valuation actually could have been more.
It could have been, and I think it was. But Kenny Williams did say they didn't want to go to that $30 million per year. I guess for that length. I don't know. I just think that the White Sox are going to be very... It would be very strange to me to see the White Sox just sit back and be content with missing out on Machado. I think they're still going to be very aggressive in free agency.
Good.
You know.
To make you feel better, Rome?
No.
All right. I tried.
You tried. Yeah, I know. I know. Because you know what? I'd given up on my own... Because there are a couple of moments in the playoffs where I watched Machado and I thought, oh, man. There were things about him when he was with the Dodgers that I just...
That'd be fun.
I didn't like.
No.
He
rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Yeah.
With his attitude?
Yep. And his play on the field. I mean, he literally was going into second base to hurt guys.
This is how we'll make you feel better, Ron. This is like when you bad-talk an ex-girlfriend or boyfriend. Yeah. She was a bum anyways. We don't need him.
She didn't pick up after herself. She left her toothpaste on the counter. And
that's all true, yeah.
Harper probably gives you a better PR-type look for a player.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's squeaky clean, and he's, you know, as far as we know.
This is the South Side, folks.
That's true. Which is why I thought Machado kind of fit into that edge piece. But then I thought
AJ Przinski edge where we loved AJ.
I know I'm going back and forth here, but my point is that I was thinking that they were going to focus in on Bryce Harper as opposed to Machado, because I do see before he's done Machado taking suspensions, especially now that he's going to be paid this kind of money, because he does like to do things. I mean, he's not the cleanest player, and you know, and again, these guys are what, 26 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 26 year olds.
Sometimes they act like 26 year olds.
With $300 million are not necessarily the best of citizens.
Does Bryce Harper have family members that they can hire quickly?
How does he get along with John Jay? Baseball?
You know, his dad's been sort of his baseball mentor his entire life. Maybe they can give his dad a position on Ricky Renteria's staff. Maybe go that route.
Like
bring your dad with, Bryce.
Aren't we already bringing
great?
Didn't we already hire Kopech's dad for something? I mean,
Kopech's dad just sort of like worked his way in. He's just everywhere. He's like, no, I'm going to be sticking around.
All right. Anyway, we'll just have to see what happens. But I think the Sox have got to take a posture here. It's important to take the posture of the place that they want to be, because what they are saying they want to be is different than where they have been, right? And they're saying that this is the time they're going to step up, and for all the reasons I just pointed out. Right. This is the moment in baseball, because of the end of the baseball television contract, the end of this season, that the whole business model is going to change for baseball. The whole business model is changing for media, but for baseball specifically, it's a very good instructive lesson in where we're heading in the media world here in America, which is that you're going to pay for things when it's all going to be a la carte. And you're going to pay for the things that you want and not for the things that you don't. And in Chicago, you have a franchise that is in the championship window on the north side, and you have a team in ascendancy on the south side. You have to sell that ascendancy, and you have to prove it up with some wins. And the White Sox have got to go do that and make the experience on television and on radio and in the ballpark better than ever. Because they've got to go. Because they're in the marketing business, and they may have some guys playing baseball.
No question.
So
the regional sports network has the White Sox, Bulls, and Blackhawks. Is that
in theory? Yes.
In theory,
I don't think that
deal has
been 100% announced yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know for sure, but that's the idea.
Right.
And the Cubs will be on their own
with the Marquee Network.
The Marquee Network, it's called. They want to make it very clear. It's not
Sinclair. Network.
It's
okay.
The Marquee Network.
I'll just reprogram. It's the Marquee Network.
It's the Marquee Network.
Marquee.
Yep.
Okay.
And so you'll have to pay an extra whatever it's going to be. They haven't announced that yet, the price
schedule. With the Cubs out of this, without having a stake in NBC Sports Chicago, could eventually cost Chicago fans even more as well, because that's built into your cable package already, just like ESPN is in every other channel. So if those three are
right. But we'll have to see. We'll have to see where that ends up. We'll have to see where NBC Sports is. That deal is not yet done.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll just have to see what happens there. Oh, God.
Oh, gee.
Oh, God. I got. You know what? And let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
My beloved Blackhawks are going to perform well. I believe they're going to make the playoffs.
This
and I believe that they are going to. As a matter of fact, let me just tell you this right now. Let me do this.
Sure.
I believe that you are going to be at the big 12th annual convention at the Hilton this summer, July 26th to the 28th. Mm-hmm. And the Stanley Cup's going to be there. That's how crazy I am.
Goosebumps.
Because I think they're going to make the playoffs. And I think they're going to make a very deep run. And I think they got as good a shot as anybody because they are playing lights out. You have never seen Kane play like you've seen Patrick Kane play. Like you're seeing this year. Alistair Brincat is about to become the leader in his second full year, the leader in hat tricks.
How about that?
I mean, this is you're seeing some amazing stuff. They do need a little work on defense right now, and that might be the case. But
as you told Jeremy Colleton, if you score more goals than your opponent,
which they did last night,
they're following your guidance there.
They scored a touchdown with the extra points. they did a 2-point conversion. They won the game last night. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. Important programming note that on Friday we are doing a just recently scheduled, at the very last minute, appearance at the United Center.
We are doing
our show from the United Center. We're adding, we generally do it every 3 to 4 weeks. We are adding a special event. Because there is a special event at the United Center.
It's Margarita Night.
Yes, and that's the most important thing.
Plus, don't forget, our record and the Blackhawks' record when we are present at games is pretty close to,
I think we're at 1,000.
Yeah.
I don't know if Kevin's still out, or if he decided.
They win when we're there, let's just put it that way.
Did Kevin, are you still there?
I'm still here. Yeah.
I thought maybe that Kevin was actually drowning his sorrows. He and Kenny Williams were going to go to a local bar and just drink themselves in until their liver hurt.
Sobbing.
Yeah. Steve Conroy is joining us right now. You know him. You love him from the television. But you know him. You also love him as a former Blackhawks defenseman. And we could use you right now, Steve. I'm not going to lie to you. But it is Margarita Night. They're doing there's something like with Jimmy Buffett or something, right? Is Margaritaville?
You know what, Ro? I've read the read a couple of times, and it just sounds like there'll be alcohol involved, and there'll be some Jimmy Buffett music, and a party like atmosphere. So
parrot heads, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it should be a lot of fun, and wear your Hawaiian shirts, wear your sombreros, wear whatever you want, but it should be a good night, and hopefully the Blackhawks get another win and continue this unbelievable run they've been on. Mm.
Can you just speak to me for a second about Patrick Kane?
Well, you know, we're so lucky we get to watch him every night. He is a generational talent, and they talk about, you know, guys coming along every once in a while who just, you know, redefine the game, and I think he's really done that. First of all, he's American-born, and that doesn't happen very often, and he will go down as the greatest American-born player ever to play hockey when he's all said and done. You know what's funny? When you look at the scoring leaders, and he's still, you know, he's, what, 7 or 8 points behind Kucherov now, but he's still in second place. All these kids, Kucherov's 25, and Nathan MacKinnon's 22, and Connor McDavid, 21, 22. I mean, he's 30 years old, which certainly isn't old, but, I mean, he's 5, 6, 7, 8 years older than these guys that he's fighting tooth and nail with to win this scoring championship. So, but getting back to Patrick,
I want to go back to the American thing for a second. Isn't it something that the Blackhawks, two of the greatest Blackhawk players of all times, or two of the arguably the two best American hockey players of all times, and Chris Chelios and Patrick Kane?
Yeah, I know, and I played with Chris back in the late 80s and early 90s, and he was certainly right up there, but I honestly think Patrick's taken it to another level, and, you know, all the attention he gets. I mean, for a while there, when the Blackhawks, you know, weren't going real well, there was one guy scoring still, and it was Patrick Kane, so other teams were loading up against Kane, and he was still producing each and every night. So, I'll go back to just a real quick story, and it's been told many times, but, you know, growing up in Buffalo, New York, they said, well, Whaley plays up in Canada. Those Canadian kids will show him how hockey's really played. And he dominated in Canada, and then it was, well, Whaley plays junior hockey, and he dominated in junior, and he said, well, he'll never be able to play in the NHL, and look what he's done in the NHL. So he's just one of those guys who, I still think he's improving, which is hard to imagine, but he is getting better by the day.
Yeah, special.
Steve, he's got to be the front runner for MVP right now, especially if the Hawks make the playoffs, right?
Well, I think so, but let's say Kucherov finishes, 12 points ahead of him. It might be hard to deny him that. But if the Blackhawks make the playoffs and he's within, 3 or 4 points of Kucherov, I don't know how the Blackhawks were dead in the water 2 months ago. I think they were in last place, and if
couldn't
it wasn't
have been
last,
more
it was
dead.
Second to last.
Could not have been more dead in the water. The deadest of dead in the water. They had sunk. They were 3.5 miles under the water. That's how bad they were. And I'm like, what are they? I thought it was going to be wholesale. They were going to get rid of everybody. I thought Kane, Kane was going to leave so much, but I did think they were going to move Taves to Winnipeg because, that would be sort of a natural, and Winnipeg has always expressed some form of interest in him. And I thought, because, Winnipeg, right? I mean, they're playing great, and this is an opportunity for them to get to that next level. And I got to give it to Stan Bowman that he did not let go of Kane and Taves at a moment where he was probably offered a significant amount to do it because he believed in the chemistry of this and that if they held it in Jeremy Colleton, because he also didn't want to hamstring him because I think they want to make a long-term investment in their new coach. And this, and they've turned it around. And now they sit 1 point away. It's still going to be, this is not an assured thing that they make the playoffs. But I'm telling you, Steve Conroy, if they make the playoffs, they'll be playing in June.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it kind of reminds me, remember a couple of years ago in Nashville, they just made it in by the skin of their teeth. Yep. They were the 16th seed out of all 16 teams that make the postseason, and then they go all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Right. They did not win, but they did make it to the finals. And, yeah, it would be something like that. I don't think any team would want to play, the Chicago Blackhawks with the experience they have, guys winning Stanley Cups and big-time performers when the lights are brightest. So I'm with you, and I'll go back to, Stan staying the course. And how about Jeremy Colleton? I mean, he only had 3 wins in his first 17 games. That is scary bad, and he stuck with it. And it's so hard, to stick with something when things aren't working out. Yeah. But he believed in his system, he believed in himself, and he believed in the guys, and now they're proving him right.
Oh, that's fun. Really,
Steve,
fun.
How do you see the goalie situation playing itself out when Corey Crawford sounds like he can't wait to get back into in-game action, but you got Dealey and Ward who have been, yesterday was a little bit different, but for the most part, they've been real solid over the past 2-3 weeks here. When Crawford returns, you think they go with a 3-man goalie situation?
Well, Kevin, first off, it's a nice problem to have, three guys who, are capable of winning on each and every night. Yeah, Colin Delia, he struggled his last game. It's the first time he's been yanked at the NHL level, but, that's how you learn. Sometimes you got to fall down to learn those tough lessons, and I think he'll come back a better goalie for it. Now, that all being said, I think once Corey's ready to go, they probably will send Delia back to Rockford, barring a deal, and you never know. I mean, there's lots of teams out there that are looking for, playoff experience, playoff-proven goaltenders heading into the playoffs, and, Cam Ward's got a no-trade clause, but if he lifts that, he could possibly go to a team that's looking to make a push in the playoffs. But, I think right now as it stands, it looks like soon as Corey Crawford's ready to take the net, Colin Dealey will go back to Rockford and Cam Ward will be the backup. And, things will be back to normal again between the pipes.
Steve Conroy, as a defenseman in this our beloved National Hockey League, have you ever seen a team give up 7 goals and win a game?
the Oilers used to do that back in the 80s. They used to win games 9-7, 10-8.
Yeah, and remind me. Just remind me for a second, Steve. Now, the Oilers had this guy. I cannot remember his name now. Like flowing hair. I can see him, but I can't remember his name. Okay, if you have the greatest hockey player of all times, the greatest offensive hockey player of all times, yes, I could see that happening. But this is a pretty unusual circumstance in the modern NHL.
Well, it is, but, you know, it's not just Kane that's been heating up. I mean, you know, Alex DeBrincat, here's another American kid who's absolutely torching it up of late. Jonathan Toews looks like the Jonathan Toews of old, and Dylan Strome, one of those trades, those deft trades that Stan Bowman made, is really contributing in a big way. So, you know, it's not just the one line. And but I'll get back to your point about defensive hockey. I think really, if you want to win, especially in the playoffs, and we're making a playoff push here, but you got to cut down on your goals against. So, it doesn't happen very often where you allow 7 goals and you win. But the Blackhawks, I think over their last 11 games now, have scored 55 goals, which, you know...
Think about that. Oh, wow. Think about that for a second. Hey, Steve, I wanted to say, you know, we interviewed Jeremy Colleton before his first win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we were at Queenie's, and we did the show out
beautiful
there.
Spot.
Yes, and we had him on, and I said to him, I said, you know, there's one thing that's very important.
You gave him a little advice.
I gave him some advice because, you know,
on the job.
I never played the game except on a frozen tennis court. But I have watched a lot. I've watched my whole life, and I said to him, I got some advice for you. At the end of the game, at the end of the regulation 60 minutes, you need to have scored more goals than the opposing team. I told him that. And
well, when you boil it all down, that's what it comes down to, right?
He did seem to take that advice to heart, and it seems to be working now. Yeah.
Look at this.
Well, you can take credit for this run that we're on.
I'm taking total credit, Steve. Total credit. All right.
But you know, and a lot of coaches, you know, I had a lot of great coaches in my career. I had Badger Bob Johnson when I was in Calgary, and I had Al Arbor when I was with the New York Islanders, and I had Scotty Bowman. I was in Detroit for a little bit, and I had Scotty Bowman there. And all those guys, it's funny how they used to preach, if you're preventing goals, it's almost as good as scoring a goal. And, you know, when a team understands that, and you don't get the accolades, and it's not as fun as winning a game 8-7. And listen, the atmosphere at the United Center yesterday was unbelievable, and it's been unbelievable for the last dozen or so games.
It's as loud as it was in 2015 now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's just a buzz in the building, and it's great to feel. But, you know, those coaches were maybe old school, but it was like, hey, listen, if you're preventing goals, that's like producing. So, you know, I think there's kind of a happy medium here. So if we can score 3-4 goals a game, limit the opposition to 1 or 2, you're going to win your fair share of games.
Okay. All right.
Simple.
All right. Don't forget.
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. The 12th annual Hawks Convention, in which we will be celebrating a Stanley Cup win. The Stanley Cup will be there. The guy with the 12-year-old boy haircut will be there with the
blonde,
white gloves,
flowing hair.
Right?
Very nice guy.
It's all good. I feel it. You people think I'm crazy. I am. But I feel this right now. That they're going to make the playoffs, and when they make the playoffs, they are going to be
watch out.
Steve Conroy knows what he's talking about. Don't just take my word for it. They're going to make a long run here, and I think they've got a good shot, and I have this feeling. Tickets are on sale now. Magellan Corporation is sponsoring this year, 2019 Blackhawks Convention, going to be at the Hilton Chicago, July 26th or 28th. Right now, let's see, I've not given these away yet, have I? I have? I already did. Yes, I did. 20 minutes ago. You know what? I'm still upset about the Manny Machado thing. And
it's been on your head.
And I've got, and
what's your name?
Don't worry about it, Mr. Jennings. I've got enough issues right now. I've lost my mind. Steve, thank you. Appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
I thought that maybe I had.
No, which you did, and then that's cool. But we're going to be out there on Friday, and how great is that going to be?
We should also mention tomorrow night is an early game. I think a lot of people are confused by this. Tomorrow night is an early game. It is in Detroit if you're driving to it, because people I know are going to be going 6:30.
They don't want to miss a single game.
Right. All right. David Jennings will tell us what's happening in the newsroom at the top of the hour.
Jesse Smollett, we still don't know what we don't know.
Deck party soon.
Yep.
Winter's almost over.
Also, that website's got great deck pics on it of my deck.
Oh, great.
So if you want to, take a look at my deck, it's the deck pics are, like, there's got to be dozens of them on
there. And now that you're going to have a grandpuppy, or do have a grandpuppy, you're going to maybe have pictures of your grandpuppy on the deck.
Yep. Yeah. That might actually be the case. And if that grand puppy does anything on my deck,
mm-hmm. Problems.
I'm going to be very mad at that grand puppy.
Better get him trained.
He's going to boot camp right now. He's been dropped off at boot camp
already
on his way from the breeder to the boot camp.
He's 8 weeks old or something, nine
yes.
weeks old.
Yeah, he's already there. He's got to learn concrete, kid.
That's right.
For the city.
That's important.
Yeah. That's what happens. This is, you know, the dog, you know, he used to just get a dog and I knew what it was doing. Now dog's got to get a degree.
It's more common than you think.
Got to go to
get them trained early.
Purdue International or whatever that thing is called.
Yeah. But you're happy you do that when they come back.
Andre Darlis, right around the corner.